Welcome to the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. Had a great couple of days at the Memorial Tournament last week. Even made my way out to the nation's capital and got to play a very enjoyable round of golf at Andrews Air Force Base, where the president plays. William McGuirk won his first PGA Tour title at the Memorial. Matt Fitzpatrick is beginning to achieve his potential on the European Tour. And Anna Nordqvist defended her title at the ShopRite Classic on the LPGA Tour. We've got a lot of golf to talk about tonight, so let's go.
Let's go, and we have two VIGs, not one, two very important guests of the week. We're going to have a short from the Memorial Tournament from Jason Day, the world's number one golfer. And also we have Zach Blair, also a PGA Tour golfer. And in our topic of the week, we're going to be talking, each of us, Fred and I, are going to pick five top golf resorts to go this summer, so you don't want to miss this. So anyway, let's start right away with the Weekend Backspin, where we recap the weekend's action. And Fred, you're going to have the tee shot. What happened there at your home court there at the Memorial?
Yeah, William McGuirk collected his maiden victory on the PGA Tour last week at the Memorial. Only a minimal amount of rainstorms halted play during the week, and that might be some sort of record for Muirfield Village. McGuirk used advice gleaned from Tiger Woods to look at scoreboards more often and use breathing techniques to slow down his pace of play coming down the final stretch. He said when under pressure, he tends to get too fast and concentrate on slowing down and focusing on each shot during the final round. He turned professional in 2004, has only played in one major, the 2012 PGA Championship, but all that's going to change now as he will be in the Masters, U.S. Open, and Open Championship. John Curran earned his PGA Tour card in 2015 by finishing 12th on the 2014 Web.com Tour. He earned over $1 million last season, and his runner-up finish at the Memorial moves him to $1.7 million in earnings this season, and he's now number 36 on the FedEx Cup standings. He made a clutch birdie at the 17th hole from the fairway bunker to get to 15-under and into the playoff with McGuirk. A bogey on the second playoff hole proved to be the difference. He was not too disappointed, however. It was his best finish, and the runner-up will give him confidence going forward. If you can play well around Muirfield Village, you can pretty much play anywhere. More importantly, Kevin Na bet Bubba Watson $100 on Sunday that he couldn't drive the green at the 364-yard par 4 14th on Sunday. Number 14 at Muirfield Village, beautiful little par 4. Stream starts off the left side of the tee, runs down, cuts across in front of the green, long, narrow green, sloped from left to right, bunker along one side, creek along the other side. It's tempting, but there's not much to hit to down there. Well, Bubba took the bet, and guess what? He hit the green. So he took Kevin Na's $100, gave it to a fan, and said, Merry Christmas. Other than Tim Fincham announcing the WGC Cadillac is moving to Mexico, the big story at the Memorial was golf's biggest names faltering down the stretch. Dustin Johnson had a good shot to win the tournament, but four bogeys on the back nine knocked him out of contention and left him one shot behind the leaders for solo third. It looked like Matt Kuchar was going to win his second Memorial title, but uncharacteristically, he too faltered with a bogey at the treacherous par 312. A double bogey at 13, and another bogey at 15, which pushed him down to a T4 with Rory, Gary Woodland, and J.B. Holmes. Jordan Spieth must have been hungover from his big finish last week at the Colonial. He finished poorly with a 74-73 on the weekend and ended up T57. World number one, Jason Day, who's a member at Muirfield Village, was in the mix after 54 holes, but fell 16 spots on Sunday to finish T27 with a final round 74. All in all, Carlos, it was a great Memorial Tournament. There was an unusual buzz around the course early in the week, maybe because all of the top three players in the world were in the field and all three coming off wins. The big three couldn't live up to all the hype, though, and Will McGirt slipped in, got the trophy, and the big check.
Hey, and also John Curran was there in that playoff, so it was two virtually unexpected players there at the top of the leaderboard. But, hey, great congratulations for William. Hey, let's talk a little bit now about the LPGA. Let me tell you, Fred, all week people were telling the Swedish native Anna Nordqvist that she could win her second straight ShopRite LPGA Classic. Indeed, she did. Nordqvist successfully defended her Classic title Sunday, closing with a 7-under-64 in what was breezy conditions for a one-stroke victory over Japan's Haru Nomura. She became the first player in the 28-year history of the Classic to win the event back-to-back and joined Søren Stam, Betsy King, Julie Ingster, and Stacey Lewis as the only players to win more than one. Nordqvist, she finished at 17-under-par on the Donald Ross designed Bay course to tie the tournament record that Annika Sorenstam, she set in 1998 and matched back in 2005. Nordqvist also tied her record for lowest 54-hole scored and posted a one-stroke victory in the tournament there at Stockton Sea View Hotel and Golf Club. Nomura, she's a two-time winner on Tour this season. She was two shots back going to 18. She had a 25-yard pitch for eagle to tie, but the ball veered to the left of the hole, so she had to settle for sinking the birdie putt for 66 and second place at 16-under. Karini Kerr, she was a 36-hole leader. She was seeking her first LPGA career win in her 282nd start, but unfortunately, she could not keep up with Nordqvist's pace, and she took third at 14-under. For Nordqvist, who at 28, she's the oldest winner on the LPGA Tour this year. It was the sixth win of her career and the first of 2016. Hey, it came just at the right time with the season's next major, which is the KPMG Women's PGA coming up this week. Well, she had been consistent all season. She had just two top 10 finishes for the show so far entering this event. She collected a very nice check of $225,000 for that first place and moved up four slots in the Rolex rankings to number 15. And Fred, also on the Symetra Tour, Jackie Stalting, she made a 28-footer on the second play of hole to fend off rising star Emma Talley to win the Fushilo Kia Championship at Capitol Hills. It was her third career victory and the first in 2016. Stalting, she posted a 1-under to finish at 9-under to get in the playoff. She's 29 years old, and now she earned a payday of $18,750 and a brand new 2016 Kia Forte, courtesy of Fushilo Kia of Schenectady. And she's now moving from 28th to 6th on the new Volvic race for the card money list. As for Emma Talley, well, she made her presence known right away as she got into a playoff and earned $12,021 in what was her professional debut to get to 33rd on the public race for the cart money list. She posted a bogey 3-4-under just to get into the playoff and said she was feeling a little anxiety and pressure during the playoff, but she now knows she can compete, and so do we. So be aware that Emma Talley, that was her first, the former Alabama outstanding golfer there. She is one to look for there at the Symetra Tour. And one more name for her to keep an eye on the Symetra Tour. That's Dana Finkelstein. She now, with back-to-back top fives, she checked in with bogey free, also 4-under on Sunday to finish in a tie for fourth. Last week, she had the WBC Mason Championship. She finished in a tie for third. So Fred Finkelstein, she moved from 11th to 9th now on the Volvic race for the card money list. She has now three top 10 finishes as a rookie in tour.
Yeah, I think Tally's going to be a real player to watch. You know, she won the 2013 U.S. Women's Amateur, and she also won the 2015 NCAA Division I Women's Championship. So she knows how to win. You know, she completed her schooling, and she's mature. You know, I think she's a real player to watch going forward, Carlos. Hey, on the Champions Tour, they were in Des Moines, Iowa for the Principal Charity Classic, and part-time television commentator Scotty McCarron won his first event on the Champions Tour. Rounds of 68, 68, 65 allowed him to hold off Billy Andrade and Miguel Angel Jimenez, the most interesting man in golf, for the win. Rocco Mediate collected another top 10 finish and is moving up the Charles Schwab Cup race to number 5, but Bernhard Langer still leads in the season-long competition. Hey, Carlos, the next stop for the seniors is the Consolation Senior Players Championship, one of their majors, at Philadelphia Cricket Club next week.
Hey, Fred, I have to take this one. As you all know, I have been very high on the prospect of Matthew Fitzpatrick.
You have been. Yes, you have.
And he headed into the final day there at Brohoff Slot with a 5-shot advantage, and while that lead was cut to 2 around the turn, he played some solid golf in the back nine, and he was able to cruise home to sign for a 71, get to 16 under, and hold off the challenge of Lasse Janssen and Nicholas Kolsarts. The defending champion, Alexander Noren, who was aiming for his third title there at Brohoff, he had a very disappointing day. Tied for second overnight, the sweet shot 4 over 78, ouch, to finish tied for 12. For Fitzpatrick, it was his second European Tour victory and his 51st European Tour event following his victory in the British Masters last season. And Fred, most importantly, at age 21, he's now up 13 spots to number 32, and the win has greatly improved his chances of making Darren Clark's Ryder Cup team for Hazeltine. I can't wait to see, Fred, what the future holds for him.
He's on the team, Carlos. You can just pencil his name in, because even if he doesn't make it, Darren's going to pick him. You can mark it down. That's a fact. Hey, on the web.com tour, Dominic Bozzelli, a native of Rochester, New York, won on the web.com at Punta Cana Resort in the Dominican Republic. It was a family affair as his family was on hand to witness his win on a vacation, and they got the cherry on the top of the sundae. He picked up the win. Bozzelli moves to number 6 in the web.com tour standings, and with his tour card nearly locked up, he admitted it was a relief to get his first win, but he said he will continue to try to progress forward with his game and switch gears slightly. He'll now start to get ready for life on the PGA Tour. I know I've got the talent to finish with the 25, but if you get ahead of yourself, that's when things go kind of astray, he said. We're going to celebrate this one for sure, but I'm really looking forward to getting back to work and trying to have some more success in the future. And, Carlos, we also should mention with the U.S. Open next week, the qualifiers were held around there. There's 10 qualifiers held around the country yesterday. In sectional qualifying, there were some names, some big names that made it and some big names that didn't. The most dramatic was the 6-man playoff for 5 spots at Wedgwood Country Club in Columbus. That's right beside the Columbus Zoo, right across the river from Muirfield Village, so right in the same area. That had to be the playoff had to be carried over to actually this morning because of storms that hit the area yesterday. They couldn't get things finished up. Luke Donald, Jason Allred, Patrick Rogers, Richard Schembechler, and Scottie Scheffler earned the last 5 spots for the U.S. Open at the Columbus sectional. Daniel Summerhays was the odd man out when he missed a 5-foot par putt on the second playoff hole. He still's got a pretty good chance to get in, though, because as it was announced today, Tiger announced today that he will not play in the U.S. Open. He's withdrawn. Tiger said, while I continue to work hard on getting healthy, I'm not physically ready to play in this year's U.S. Open or the Quicken Loans National. I'm making progress, but I'm not yet ready for tournament competition. I want to thank everybody, positive text, emails, and calls. Thank everybody at the USGA. He said he'll be hosting and attending the Foundation's tournament at the Quicken Loans National, but he's not going to be a participant. Other players, so with Tiger out, that opens up one spot for sure. So, and this, the qualifier at Wedgwood was by far the most, the biggest and most difficult. Other players of note, Carlos Ortiz, who missed 9 of his last 11 cuts on tour, shot 66-66 to lead all qualifiers at the same Wedgwood course on Monday. Bryson DeChambeau, Ethan Tracy, Brendan Steele, Spencer Levine, Wes Short Jr., Kevin Streelman, and Jason Kokrak all earned spots at Oakmont next week. Billy Hurley qualified in Maryland. 2016 Tour winner Jim Herman was a low qualifier in a New Jersey sectional. And 49-year-old former PGA champ David Toms earned a spot in the Memphis, Tennessee qualifier. A few notables who failed to qualify. Well, Tony Finau has been playing really well this year on tour. He did not make it. Brian Stewart, Zach Blair, who we're going to hear from tonight, been playing very good, didn't quite make it. Troy Merritt, Jamie Sadlowski, the long driving guy, Brian Gay, Robert Garrigus, Ryan Palmer, who's been playing outstanding golf, Scott Stallings, Steve Stricker, Robert Allenby, and Ben Crane, and Lee McCoy all did not get in, Carlos.
The big name there, Steve Stricker, he didn't make it. Ouch. I was expecting him to make it and see him there at Oakmont, but unfortunately he won't. Well, that will wrap up our weekend backswing. Now we're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we're going to bring you the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Networks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, you're going to take the tee shot here, and you're going to talk to us about the Vijay Singh versus the PGA Tour case. It's heating up, Fred, and we're only on the deposition stage, but what's going on?
Things are getting a little dicey in the lawsuit filed by Vijay Singh against the PGA Tour. PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finchem stormed out of a deposition on Wednesday amid claims he lied. That Vijay Singh claims that Finchem lied. Singh versus the PGA Tour, it's just getting, you know, pretty heated. And it's only in the deposition stage. Singh is alleging that the PGA Tour treated him differently than other tour professionals in the nefarious deer spray incident of 2013. The tour originally announced a 90-day suspension for Singh for admitting he used a banned substance in a Sports Illustrated piece. WADA eventually took the substance off the banned list, and the PGA Tour was forced to drop Singh's punishment. Singh is claiming, however, the tour treated him maliciously and has lied about their policy concerning banned substances. They should never have suspended him in the first place, and when the suspension became public, it cost him irreparable damage. The case is making its way through a New York Court of Appeals, and in depositions last week, Finchem were less than happy and stormed out of a meeting. Singh's lawyer, Peter Ginsburg, claimed that the tour's legal strategy attempts to rewrite their rules to cover their own tracks. Knowing it needed to rationalize this obvious disparate treatment of Singh, the tour, during the course of its litigation, attempted to justify its arbitrary treatment. Boy, that sounds like a lot of legal jumbo-mumbo, doesn't it? Of Singh by claiming that other golfers who had used the products played on the Champions Tour and the program does not apply to Champions Tour golfers. Boy, there you go. That works out well. Singh's point of contention is that WADA didn't really change a restriction. The tour did. While the tour contends that its officials merely followed evolving WADA guidelines, Singh accused Commissioner Tim Finchem of lying when he pinned the tour's decision to withdraw its anti-doping case against him on a change in WADA policy that clarified that it no longer considers the use of deer antler spray to be prohibited unless a positive test results. Singh contends WADA did no such thing. Citing testimony from WADA's science director of that WADA's position on deer antler spray hadn't changed in several years. That accusation may not have sat well with Commissioner, and Singh is not the most popular guy on the PGA Tour right now. This thing's one big mess, Carlos, and I just don't see it getting any better or getting settled anytime soon, I'm afraid.
It gives us a little bit to talk about, and it's kind of a soap opera that we need there in golf is getting exciting.
Off the course. We need them on the course exciting, not off the course.
Well, sometimes you need some off the course just to talk about something other than Donald Trump. But anyway,
we don't have any Trump news tonight.
No,
we don't,
I'm surprised.
Do we have any Trump in here?
What happened?
Oh, I don't
know. Let me check. No.
The guy that laid the show out must have screwed up.
Yeah. Well, Carlos, come on. What happened there?
We'll find something. We'll find something to talk about Trump.
We'll see. We'll keep before we finish the show, we'll try to find something from him. But anyway, let me tell you something about European Tour news. The bogey finish cost Paddy Harrington dearly in the U.S. Open International qualifying at Walton Heath, where the Dubliner narrowly missed out on securing a ticket to the upcoming U.S. Open. Harrington, who has 5 top 10 career finishes in the U.S. Open, but who hasn't played in the championships since 2013, he looks set to book one of the 13 places on offer at Surrey venue outside London, only to drop shots in his finishing 2 holes for a second round 71 and a 36 holes total of 143. It was the second successive year that Harrington suffered a bogey on his last hole of qualifying to miss out. So sorry for Paddy there. Team Europe's Ryder Cup captain, Darren Clarke. Hey, he has named Ian Poulter vice captain after the Englishman he recently revealed a foot injury would stop him from competing in October's match against the United States. The 40-year-old Englishman will become Clark's 4th vice captain alongside Thomas Bjorn, Paddy Harrington, and Paul Laurie, with Clark expected to add a 5th and final vice captain later this summer. Poulter, who don't know him, he will bring a wealth of experience there to Team Europe's team room, having played 5 times where he helped Europe to win in 4 occasions. And even in the loss at Valhalla, he was still the top point scorer at 4 points out of 5. He now just needs to see how he can pass on that fiery competitiveness to the players on the field from his new position. So it'll be interesting to see him there. And finally, we'll have to talk about Royal Troon. They have brought forward a vote to admit women members to before this year's Open in an apparent reaction to Mirfield's removal from the championship rota. A comprehensive review of the membership policy was announced by Troon in January of 2015 and was initially not due to be resolved until the back end of 2016. However, the RNA's decision that Mirfield will no longer be considered to host the Open after a vote to allow women members failed to achieve the 2/3 majority required has prompted an acceleration in Troon's process. Fred, following hard on the heels of the Mirfield fiasco, Royal Troon seems now poised to take women members ahead of this year's Open Championship. A special general meeting has been called for July 1st, a voting where the club's constitution will be adjusted to allow for mixed membership. And Martin Chain, the club captain, he says that a further statement for it will be made after the meeting.
Yeah, a couple things here. I think you mentioned Ian Poulter in there, going to be a vice captain. And if you remember, on the heels of the last Ryder Cup loss that Tom Watson suffered there at Glen Eagles, Ted Bishop made the comment, had a little Twitter battle with Ian Poulter and was subsequently fired by the PGA of America with just 1 month ago in his tenure. Ted's written a new book called Unfriended, and we're going to probably have him on the show here in about 2 weeks to talk about the new book. And the other thing, all this hullabaloo about women members, Jack Nicklaus was doing a press conference in Columbus at the Memorial last week, and he was asked a question about Mirfield not accepting women members, which he didn't even know about. Okay, but Mirfield Village is named after Mirfield because he has a great love for that golf course.
Yeah.
And Jack said, we had that kind of a problem here. He said, it just shows you how stupid I am. He said, when I built this golf course when we opened, he said, I went around and made sure that I had members from a very diverse group. We wanted to make sure we had every ethnicity, every religion, everything that you could imagine. I wanted to make sure I had members of a cross-section all across America. I didn't want, you know, just I didn't want to be known as that. Oh yeah, that's the club for whatever. And I didn't want to exclude anybody. He said, we're a year in. We're open a year. And somebody in a meeting brought up and said, Jack, what do you want to do about the fact we don't have any women members? And he was just dumbfounded. You know, he never thought about inviting any women members. He said, we took care of that in 1 minute. 1 minute. He said, okay, let's get some women members. No problem. So he said, that just shows you how stupid I am that we didn't take care of that when we were doing it. But he did take care of it as soon as it was brought to his attention. Hey, let's move on. We do have some Trump news, Carlos. We couldn't do it without it. You know that. After walking out of the deposition, out of VJ's deposition, the PGA Tour commissioner jetted over to Columbus to announce some big news. As we all know, Cadillac had withdrawn its sponsorship of the WGC, the World Golf Championship, that was held at Doral every March, and a new sponsor could not be found. It seemed that Donald Trump is just too controversial right now, and huge corporations do not want to be seen aligning with the outspoken candidate, television star, real estate tycoon, huckster, I don't know, you pick one. There has been a PGA Tour event held at Doral since 1962, and in spite of PGA Tour comments, this is a huge blow for the tour. It's also a big hit for the Southern Florida economy that depends on the millions of dollars that the tournament generates every spring for the area. The truth is that even with the $250 million that Trump spent to freshen up Doral, it's just not the same course that we've come to know and love over the years. I don't think the players were all that happy about it either. Originally billed as a way to take big-time golf around the world, only one World Golf Championship, the HSBC Champions, has ever been held outside the United States. In addition to the Cadillac at Doral in Florida, the Bridgestone is held at Firestone in Akron each year, and the match play has been held in Arizona, California, and now Texas. Moving such a high-profile event to Mexico may be a huge risk. Yes, Mayakoba hosts an event every year. The Latino American, Web.com, and even the LPGA Tours host events in Mexico. But bringing the 65 best players in the world to Mexico City every March, sizable risk for the tour. This is the state of the PGA Tour today, and whether the players like it or not, they will have to become more global in scope. The LPGA Tour embraces global play, and it's done it wonders for them. In any event, Rory McIlroy made a quip during his press interview at Muirfield on Wednesday. In answering a question about moving from Doral to Mexico, Rory said, "Yeah, they are called World Golf Championships for a reason. I always felt that having three of them in the United States wasn't really spreading the game." And then he added, "It is quite ironic that we're going to Mexico after being at Doral. We just jump over the wall." That brought the house down. The USGA and PGA have announced that three of their previously scheduled events will be held at Donald Trump courses next year and in 2012. But for right now, there will not be a Florida Swing event at Doral in 2017, Carlos.
And that will wrap up our Part 5 news presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, you have some words from our sponsor.
No, we got more.
Oh, we do?
You got to talk to us about USGA and RNA.
Sorry.
I got to talk about
sorry.
Billy.
What happened to me, man?
You're ahead of yourself. Slow down. You got so excited about talking about Donald, man. You know.
We found something.
You got to tell us about the USGA and the RNA.
I thought the show was over because we covered Donald. I mean, it's incredible. Oh, my God. What's going on, Carlos?
Got to slow you down. You got to do like Will McGirt. You got to slow down. Breathe. Practice breathing techniques.
Okay. Let me talk about the ruling bodies of golf, the RNA and the USGA. They keep a close eye on how far players are hitting the ball, in part because of criticism that the USGA and the RNA let technology get away from them in the 1990s and early 2000s. and in part to provide guidance to owners and operators about course lengths and maintenance practices. But last Thursday, the USGA and the RNA issued that 18-page report on driving distance in professional golf. And while drilling into the data might leave you cross-eyed, the surprising summary from the research is that on the PGA Tour, the Web.com Tour, and the European Tour, and the PGA Tour Champions, the average drives have increased only 1% or about 0.2 yards a year since 2013, with the longest 10 players about 7% above average and the shortest 10 about 6% below average. Also raising a few eyebrows, the average distance on the LPGA Tour, the Ladies European Tour, and the Japan PGA Tour has decreased about 1% in that same time period. So why are some tours getting longer, although by minuscule amounts, and others are getting shorter? Well, that seems to be the most valid question right now. But while the report is inconclusive on that point, it is worth noting that while more than 40,000 tee shots were analyzed, the data were not adjusted for course conditions. The report did state, however, that, and I quote, "The RNA and the USGA believe that any further significant increases in hitting distances at the highest level are undesirable. Whether these increases in distance emanate from the advancing equipment technology, greater athleticism of players, improved player coaching, golf course conditioning, or a combine of this or other factors," man, they didn't leave anything out, "they will have the impact of seriously reducing the challenge of the game. The consequential lengthening or toughening of courses would be costly or impossible and would have a negative effect on increasingly important environmental and ecological issues. Pace of play would be slowed and playing costs would increase. The RNA and the USGA will consider all of these factors, contributing to distance on a regular basis. Should such a situation, meaningful increases in distance arise, the RNA and the USGA would feel it immediately necessary to seek ways of protecting the game." End of quote. You know, golf rulings bodies want to make it clear that their study of the distance issue has not been a recent phenomenon. Hence, this report. So if you think the pros are hitting the ball too far, the USGA has an 18-page report it would like you to read. And the short answer from the golf rules makers to that question, Fred? In short, we don't see it.
Well, I got one thing to tell you, Carlos. A couple things, actually. Bubba Watson drove a 364-yard par 4 on Sunday. Okay? That's one thing. And Dustin Johnson, on number 17 and number 18 at Muirfield Village on Sunday. Now, granted, he was downwind, okay? And there was a pretty good wind. But on just two holes, he had 740 yards of drives, okay? Two 370-yard drives, back to back, okay? So you telling me the ball isn't flying farther? You tell me, no, I don't believe you. I'm sorry. And you know what? You ask Jack Nicklaus, and Jack knows a little bit about what he's talking about, okay? You know what he says?
Change the frickin' ball.
Exactly. I don't need no stinking study, and I don't need no Iron Byron to tell me the ball's flying farther. These guys are bigger, stronger. The technology's better. They're hitting it farther. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Billy Walters, Phil Mickelson, and insider trading. That's always exciting. How do we get to insider trading from golf? This is a golf show. How do we get here?
Let's talk to Phil.
We had the story last week about Phil Mickelson. You know, it was at the Memorial last year, if you remember, where the FBI escorted Phil off the 18th green down to their office in downtown and questioned him about Billy Walters, if you remember. That's when this whole thing started, if you remember. But we had the story last week about Phil agreeing to the $931,000 fine for insider trading irregularities. In the past, Phil has been linked with known gambler and financial wheeler dealer Billy Walters. There's an excellent story in the May 31st Bloomberg News about Billy Walters, accused of insider trading and his friend Phil Mickelson. He was a big golfer and owned Black Stallion Golf Club, as well as a large portion of real estate in the Las Vegas area. For three decades, Walters was considered the most successful sports gambler in the country. By the early 2000s, he'd built a business empire with interests ranging from gambling to real estate, from golf courses to car dealerships. Like many Nevadans, Walters was hit hard when the bottom fell out of Vegas in the mid-2000s. Documents filed in connection with several lawsuits over the past decade show how the financial pressures were mounting at around the time he embarked on what authorities say was a scheme in which illegal stock tips helped him generate some $43 million in profits and avoided losses. The stock trades in question involved the former chairman of Dean Foods, Thomas Davis, who has agreed to plead guilty and cooperate in the case against Walters. Mickelson and Walters, a huge golf fan, have become fast friends over the years, and it was only natural progression that the two would do some investing together. Well, it appears that Walters was getting too much inside information, and the SEC loves to crack down on high-profile individuals that appear to be doing better than the average trader. Betting on Wall Street is a little different than betting on the Vegas odds. Phil always enjoys a good wager, but it appears he went a little too close to the fire with Mr. Walters, and it has caused him a huge hit to his reputation as well as his wallet. So, Carlos, yeah, I think Phil got in a little bit over his head there. But now, that wraps up the Par 5 News for June 7th, 2016. And United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products: Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for used savings. They also offer every golf nut the chance to earn. They have the director's program where you earn commissions. You get a discount on everything you buy. If you get your buddies to buy some stuff, they get the discounts. You earn the commissions. It's a good deal. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And now we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to have our VIGs, our very important guest of the week, Jason Day and Zach Blair. You cannot go anywhere. This is going to be a short break.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest off the week section. And Fred, we have Jason Day, the world's number one player in golf, and Zach Blair. We're going to start with Jason Day from the Memorial. Can you tell us a little bit about what we're going to listen?
Yeah, we have comments from the press conference that Jason Day did on Wednesday prior to the Memorial Tournament. Muirfield Village is his home course, but he does not have a good record in the tournament every year. He talked about Oakmont. He's only played Oakmont once, and that was several years ago, maybe 2006 or 7. But he's going to visit there later this week. He's going to walk around with a longtime head pro there, Bob Ford, who we should have on the show next week. He talks about being number one and staying there, distractions and maturing with a family, as well as learning to control his emotions. He talks about a lot of good stuff. It's only about an 8-minute piece. It's pretty good stuff. Carlos, give it a roll.
Let's roll it.
The following are some comments that Jason Day made at the press conference last week prior to the Memorial Tournament. And we have those comments here for you on Back Nine Report. The first one is ask about extending his lead or having the lead over Rory and Jordan Spieth and the competitive nature of all those three golfers to want to get back on the top of the golf world.
I extended my lead there for a while, and now Jordan and Rory are both closing on it. I heard a couple of years ago that it bothered Jordan that I was, winning tournaments and having the number one spot in the world. And so it should, bother guys that are competitive and want to be on top as well. And there's nothing wrong with being bothered by that. And I'm hoping that it motivates them just as much as it motivates me to see other guys on top of the world and winning tournaments. And that's just how some guys are pushed, and I know that I'm pushed that way as well when I see Rory or Jordan on top of the world, and I want to do that as well. So, it's great to see how they've responded so quickly, with how Rory played, especially strong 16 and 18 at, the Irish Open. Some of the best, three woods and five woods I've seen in a long while. And then Jordan playing so great at the backside of Colonial Country Club and to be able to finish off with three birdies on the stride and, chip on 17, but the, just the way he putted, I don't know how many feet, I think it was like 150-something feet of putts he held that day, and all of them were pretty much on the backside. And, just a really quick response time by those guys, and it just goes to show that, you just can't live and die by each week. I mean, there's some people, I hate to say it, but some people want to see guys, like us fail, and unfortunately we're not going to be on top all the time, and, we're going to have bad tournaments here and there, but, there's a lot of pressure to be in a situation that we're in, but we wouldn't want it any other way. The guys that are trying to help grow the game, the younger guys, we're planning on being here for a long time. That's the plan, and hopefully we can stay in this position for a long time.
Jason was asked about the climb to get to number one, and then the difference of maintaining and what it takes to stay number one in the world ranking.
It's difficult in both regards, where you're climbing that mountain for the first time and it's hard to get in that position and give yourself the opportunity to be able to climb that mountain the easiest way. Obviously, once you climb that mountain, you're going to grab onto a rock and it's going to fall out from underneath you. And you're going to fail sometimes, but that's when you learn the most. Being on top is just as hard in its own right, because you have to work harder than what you did climbing that mountain to try and stay on top. And then obviously on top of it, everyone is expecting you each week to compete, play well and win. And sometimes that can be stressful. Fans and media and everything that goes along with being the best, there's a lot more time that has to be taken. I think I was out here yesterday on Monday, played a quick 9 holes, and I had to get the 30, 40 minutes signing autographs. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, if they weren't coming up to me, that would be a bad thing. But, it just comes with the territory, and you just got to understand that now, since I'm the number one player in the world, I have to kind of plan those accordingly into my day. It is what it is, but, once again, it's both difficult in both situations, but I'd much rather this situation than obviously having to climb it again, because it is tough to get up the top of the world rankings.
Jason was asked how much time he spends working on his short game, and his answer might surprise some of you who only want to go to the range and hit those 300-yard drives.
So if I'm working on my wedges, it's usually an hour and a half. Yeah, so if I'm doing, I think, 4.5 hours of short game, I add that into it, and that would be on top. So I do about three hours of, putting and chipping the bunkers and all that stuff, and then add another hour and a half of 150 yards in the end.
Jason also talked about wanting to win every week, but sometimes distractions get in the road and mental toughness just is not there week to week on the PGA Tour.
Every tournament that I play, I want to win, but it sometimes has to come in a little bit more distracted. Certain things are happening, off course, that I'm just thinking about, that I do just distracting me from trying to compete and play well. But I think the biggest thing for me is just like to be able to schedule your year out in advance, which we do, and play the select amount of tournaments that you feel like you're going to be competitive in. And that's the planning process at the start of the year, to know that, okay, I'm going to plan these events, I'm going to prepare the best I can for those, and then that will keep me hungry. So if I play less, it kind of pushes you into a corner where you're like, oh crap, I need to go out there and play well now.
Jason was asked about the upcoming U.S. Open and the Oakmont Country Club golf course and his experience there. He had only played there one time many years ago, but he expects to go over and have a walking round with longtime head professional at Oakmont, Bob Ford.
Well, what's going to happen? I think I'm going to go there Friday, play 18 holes. And Cole's going to walk around with us, and Bob Ford, who's the head pro, is also going to have a walk around with us as well. And we're going to talk about the golf course. And I've only played it once, so that is going to be probably the most learning curve I'm going to have is during next Friday's
Jason also felt it was one of the most difficult golf courses he had ever played, and it's going to be quite a challenge for the U.S. Open coming up next week.
How hard and fast the greens were. And it was like I don't know what day it was, it was just like just a normal day, no tournament there. It was just the perfect conditions, and I couldn't get over it. And I remember getting to the 8th hole, I believe, the 290-yard par 3. I'm like, I've never seen a 290-yard par 3 ever in my life. And yeah, it really surprised me how difficult it was. I think I shot 76 or 77 that day or something like that, and I just thought, man, this is just brutal golf course.
Jason said he feels much more comfortable today on the golf course, and he realizes now with two children and a wife, he can't show his anger either on the golf course or at home, and it's made him a much better player.
It's not so much. I look at it differently these days than I did in the past. Back when I was young and we were just newly married, me and Ellie, I'd take it home and be angry, and I'd be like someone grumpy old man in the corner, and I would not want anyone to talk to me. But I think I handle a little bit better these days, and I can't really take it back to in front of Ellie and the kids, because it's not very good to do that. But I look at more so as, okay, what do I need to do to get better now?
Carlos, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I was trying to get to the other thing. Jason Day, it amazed me that, he's really focused, really, really focused. I think that's part of the success that he's having now as a top player, because he realizes, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. He knows Rory's coming. He knows Jordan's coming. They have accepted that challenge. They're coming for him, and he knows what to do. And that's something that all three. And there was something that he said that people might think that we're going to be here for forever, and no, it's just that we got spoiled by Tiger being so long at the top of the game that you expect now the new number one he's going to be there for years. But no, it's not that way, Fred. And it's great to see. He's grounded, and he knows that he has to work hard each and every week to keep that number one.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, Carlos. The attitudes of Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Jason Day are all just outstanding. They're outstanding young men. And Rory's going to be getting married here pretty soon. Jason's been through it. He has a couple children, and Rory's going to have that coming up. And Jordan has a longtime girlfriend, probably will be getting married in the near future. And so that really has a calming influence, as guys mature and they become family men. It's a whole different deal. But Jason made the point in there also that he's playing less tournaments. So he puts the pressure on himself that because of that, he knows he has to perform in the tournaments when he plays, because he doesn't have as many opportunities, maybe somebody else who's playing 28 or 30, 32 tournaments. He's only playing 16, 18, whatever he's going to play. Mm-hmm. So I found that interesting that he knows he has to prepare and be ready when he does tee it up. He can't have lapses. He can't let his mind wander. He has to stay with the program.
He does. Hey, we have another interview, and that was with Zach Blair. What can we expect from this interview?
Well, I really enjoyed talking to Zach Blair and getting to meet him. He came to Toledo last week to address the first tee of Lake Erie Clinic, and he took a few minutes, played with talked to the kids, went out and played a few holes around Inverness, and did a great job. He made it to the PGA Tour last year in 2015. He finished 109 on the FedEx Cup, kept his card. He's around number 80 this year. He's been playing pretty good. A little inconsistent. He misses some cuts. You know, then he finishes top 25. You know, he's doing okay. I think he's got one or two top 10s. Needs to gain a little consistency, but really a nice young man. Really enjoyed talking to him. And Carlos, I mentioned to you then that through him, I also met his caddy, a longtime caddy, Andy Martinez, who was a caddy for Johnny Miller for 12 years when Johnny was one of the top players in the world, and then caddied for Tom Lehman for 22 years when Tom went through and was number one ranked player in the world. So we're going to have I've got some great tape of great interviews with Andy, and we'll be playing those as we go along also. But tonight we have Zach Blair, and he talks about some of the things of being relatively new on the PGA Tour and kind of what he has to do to keep making his way up the leaderboards.
Let's play it.
We're here at Inverness Club in Toledo, Ohio. We're talking with Zach Blair, who's a PGA Tour member, has been on tour since 2015, kept his card last year as a rookie, is playing this year up to number 80 on the FedEx Cup. Zach, welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So what brings you to Toledo today?
I'm going to go out and play a little exhibition with some guys out here and see if we can help some juniors out.
The first tee of Lake Erie is what he's referring to, is having a clinic here at the Inverness Club this weekend, Memorial Day. Zach and kind enough to come in and meet with the kids and give them some tips and tell them how they're going to make it to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if we can get a couple more kids liking golf, that's always a good thing.
Zach, so far this year you've had one-third, two top 10s, three top 25s, and you're up to number 80 on the FedEx Cup. So you're looking pretty good for being able to keep your card this year. Last year you finished, I think, 109, so you're moving up a little bit every year. Is things getting a little more comfortable for you on tour?
Yeah, you know, that's what it's all about, just kind of getting a little more familiar with the courses and stuff like that. So it's been a good year and looking to finish it off nice the last few weeks.
I see you are coming off a couple of missed cuts the last couple of weeks in Texas. Was there any one thing that you could point to there, or any one thing you're looking at? And I know you're going to be in the Memorial this week down in Columbus.
Yeah, you know, those were a couple of tough missed cuts. Missed them both by one. Wasn't feeling my best. Was kind of sick that first week. And then, you know, that last week it was just kind of a tough draw. And, you know, some weeks you don't have it.
Is there anything in particular that you're currently working on or thinking about between rounds?
Not really. You know, it's kind of just the same thing. You know, I understand pretty well that you're not going to play great every week. So just go out there and try and have some fun and, you know, try and find yourself into contention a few weeks.
It looks like you're pretty safe for this year for keeping your card. As we were talking a little bit earlier, one of your goals is to get into the Open Championship, so you're looking at tournaments that you can earn some exemptions or finish high enough to get into the top 50 or 60 so you can make it over to Troon.
Sure, that's definitely anytime you can find yourself into those major fields, that's obviously a bonus. So definitely looking at going and playing some of those PGA Tour tournaments that offer the Open qualifying.
Now, you're a relatively young guy, but I understand that you're biting off kind of a big project back in Utah. You want to build your own golf course.
Yeah, it's something we're trying to do right now, and hopefully we can make it happen.
Is there a name for the project?
It's called the Buck Club.
How did you happen to come up wanting to build your own club? What's the basis for it? What are you trying to get done there?
You know, I've always been a student of the game of golf, and I've traveled a lot, played a lot of golf courses, and I get to see some of the best golf courses in the world. You know, the one thing I kept noticing was all the great courses that people talk about, there's nothing really like that in Utah. So that's kind of the goal, is to make one of those courses that, you know, has those key aspects of those classic golf courses that's closer to home.
Speaking of that, I mean, you get to go around and play a lot of different places. You get invited to some of the most exclusive clubs. What are some of the top two or three places or courses that you've gotten to play?
Oh, man, there's so many, but the Pine Valleys and the Cypress Points are, you know, pretty tough to beat. But I really enjoy playing Oakmont and Seminole. Those are two other courses that were great. But, you know, there's so many good golf courses. So many of those old classic courses are so fun to play and interesting, and they keep getting better the more times you play them. So there's a lot.
Yeah, that's the thing with older courses. The first time on them, they look pretty cool, but once you play more and more, you find all the nuances and things that really make them great.
Cypress, every time I feel like I play it, I see something new, or, you know, different holes play differently, so it's fun to go play those courses.
Well, Zach, we certainly want to wish you the best of luck for the rest of the year and going forward in your career, and we'll be watching for you on the leaderboards.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
There you have it. That was Zach Blair there in his interview. And it's interesting that near Buck Your Own Club initiative that he has, and that he calls himself the student of the game, is really very different to see a young guy, a young player, and it's very refreshing to see that he's that kind of a student of the game and wanting to see something different. It's always positive to see somebody trying to impact the game, especially when it's a young guy, because they bring so many new ideas that, hey, maybe that's what the millennials and all these youngsters are trying to get at and trying to improve and get some more people into the game.
Yeah, we had lunch when he was here on Monday, and he was given a book to look through. It was the history of Inverness and had pictures of how the course had changed over the years and important people on the course. And he was just, he was really engrossed in that book. He leafed through it from front to back while we were also eating lunch and talking. And so he really is into it. He really is intrigued about building his course in Utah, and he's really into it. I should mention also that the first tee of Lake Erie announced at that meeting that they're going to be building a new facility here in town. It's going to be a training center for caddies. It's going to be they're going to do all kinds of stuff there. They're going to have their own little short course, so that they can have a whole little tournaments there and practice sessions and all those things. It's going to be attached to Inverness off the back there, and it's going to be a really special facility that they're working on. And there is an article written by Dave Briggs, who's a writer for the Toledo Blade here, that actually made it. It's one of the news stories in this week's Global Golf Post. If you haven't looked at Monday's Global Golf Post, it's in there in the news section. You can click on and read David's article about that. So, yeah, Carlos, those are great interviews and fun guys to get to talk to.
And that will wrap up our VIG Very Important Guests of the Week. We're going to take our last short break. When we come back, we have the practice range, where we are going to give you our top five golf resorts to visit this summer, so you don't want to miss it. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic. Each of us give our take on it. And Fred, this week, we're going to pick to give our listeners the top five golf resorts to visit this summer. And Fred, which are your top five?
Carlos, you know, I can't just pick five. I end up with six. You know that, right?
So, I did too. I did too. Don't tell anybody.
I'm cheating. I can't narrow it down. Number one, do you want to go back and forth here while they're number ones, or you want me to run all of mine?
Just run all of them, and then I'll give you mine, and let's see. Because
okay.
Everybody has to listen to this, I'm going to say. I don't know which are going to be Fred's top six, and he doesn't know which are going to be my top six. So let's see where we're going to be coinciding here. So go ahead and do it.
Well, I start off with I really think very highly of French Lick Resort in Indiana. It's just not the home of Larry Bird. There's the Donald Ross course and the Pete Dye course. There are just wonderful championship courses. They've hosted major championships. The Valley Links course is for the whole family. There's also another course, Sultan's Run, that's a part of the resort. So there's even a putting course. There's all kinds of stuff to do there. There's a casino. I mean, it's a full, there's a spa, the whole deal. It's a great resort in addition to the golf. The Greenbrier in West Virginia, it's just, it's a treat for any golfaholic. The history and outstanding golf, that's all you need to really say. There are five golf courses, TPC Old White, which hosts the Greenbrier Classic each year, the Greenbrier, which hosted a Ryder Cup, the Meadows, Okosh Links, built by Trevino, Player, Palmer, and Nicklaus. What more do you need to say about that? And then, of course, the Snead course, and Sam Snead was the pro emeritus there for, 35 years or whatever? You know, any of those are going to provide a very enjoyable day on the links. If you get to play more of them, you're a lucky individual. They also have tennis, a spa, first-class dining. Oh, my God, the dining is outstanding. And then they have a casino. Just a great place, the history of the hotel, and then the bunker. I mean, that's just icing on the cake. And then, Carlos, I can't narrow it down to one in the state of Michigan. I just said the state of Michigan, okay? The whole state, they've got excellent golf, sandy beaches, delectable dining, and outdoor activities for the whole family. My top choices in Michigan, for the show, Carlos, you know I go to any links. I work for the show, okay? It's all about back nine report for me. I'm going to work the rest of this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right into the weekend. I'm going to go up to Gaylord. I'm going to play golf up there and check these places out, okay? But in the Gaylord area alone, there's nine resorts with 15 golf courses. It just provides sensory overload for every golfer. What are you going to play? What are you not going to play? It's just too big of a decision. Treetops alone has four championship courses, plus the world-famous Three Tops, the par three, which is one of the best par three courses in the country. I'm going to play that on Friday, by the way, Carlos, just to give you a little nugget there. Then there's, in Michigan, there's Arcadia Bluffs, Boyne Highlands, Kingsley Club, and then Forest Dunes with its new course by Tom Doak, the reversible The Loop, which is going to open June 27th. So I'm leaving a host of other great golf courses out of this list, but there's just simply too much golf in Michigan to cover it all in one show. I could go on for days. The mountains of West Virginia also have a host of great golf, but I personally like Glade Springs in Buckley. Glade Springs is also aligned. They're owned by the same people that own the Greenbrier, so you can stay at one place and play both places. They're about an hour apart. You can go back and forth. The views are wonderful as you play any of the three golf courses there. Elevation changes, manicured fairways, undulating greens. Three and four putts are, they're plentiful. The clubhouse and restaurant are excellent, and the villas and hotel offer the best in accommodations. And then, right around the lake here, we've got Wisconsin. And there is some great golf in Wisconsin. With Chicago right there, they've got enough market, they can pull these people up there. So any trip to Wisconsin, you've got Herb Kohler's Whistling Straits, which has 36 holes. They've had some major championships there. Then they got 36 holes over at Black Wolf Run, both great facilities. Black Wolf Run is hosted to women's majors. They're set along the western shore of Lake Michigan. The views are also stunning. Then you've also got Erin Hills that's going to host a U.S. amateur over there, not too far from Milwaukee. And then you've got the new Mike Kaiser owns Sand Valley. It's a must visit if you get to Wisconsin. Oh, and then You know, these places that I just mentioned are all around the Midwest. So if you want to travel a little bit, you got Bandon Dunes out on the West Coast in Oregon, or you got Kaiser's Cabot Links up in Nova Scotia. You know, both places look pretty nice to me. I've not had the chance to get to either place yet, but they are very high on my bucket list. So, Carlos, I didn't mention Pinehurst, Myrtle Beach, Pebble Beach, or Arizona or Florida resorts because, for me, those are winter destinations, and I'm talking summer golf, so I'm talking about golf up here.
I have to agree with you, and there is one that we agree there. I knew where your likings are, so I tried to went away from them, okay? But there's some agreement that I'm going to get to. But anyway, I don't think there were six there. I think you were like 26 or something. You forgot to put the two ahead of
this. I was hoping you weren't counting, actually.
I was. I started here, okay, you said French Lick. Okay, the Greenbrier. I had the Greenbrier in my list, but I said, no, he's going to mention it, so I'm not even going to talk about it. Then you talk about the 20-something in Gaylord, 15 in Gaylord, and all that in Michigan and all that in Wisconsin. So I lost count. I said, over 20, so don't worry about it.
Don't forget Bandon, Cabot Lakes, and Glade Springs.
you know why I didn't pick Bandon Dunes? I tried, but the six that I'm going to mention are actual resorts, not only golf courses. It's just like a combine of golf resorts that
sure.
have some things. So those are the six I'm going to give you. So like you mentioned, I have to agree with you. I'm not going to mention anything south, like you said. Those are winter destinations. So let's go up now where the winter is off. There's no snow. You can go play now. So let's start by the Ocean Edge Resort and Golf Club in Brewster, in Massachusetts. Now, you want to stay in a villa or in a mansion? Hey, that's the choice that you're going to get at that Cape Cod Resort that also features a Nicholas Design course, multiple beaches with initially warm water by Northeast standards, thanks to being part of an inlet in the bay, are reachable by foot or in a resort-provided bike, or cool off at nearby Cape City Food Restaurant with their self-proclaimed largest ice cream cones on the Cape. And like I tell you, you know, that Jack Nicklaus Design course, you know it's because of the Ocean Resort in Massachusetts. Then I have the Equinox Resort Spa in Manchester Village, Vermont. You know, that's history and modern amenities are well paired, and that's probably a date back to Revolutionary War times. In addition to playing an enjoyable 18-hole layout, which was originally designed by Walter Travis and it was updated by Reese Jones, you can also attend a Land Rover Experience driving school on a custom-built course, use this full-service spa, choose from among five different types of accommodation options, and there's also a favorite summer activity is canoeing or fishing at the Battle River. Novice waiters in the hotel offers the Orvis Fly Fishing School, so you have a lot to do there. Number three, I'm going to bring you the Corn in Queen Ice. Okay.
Hey, Carlos, you're breaking up. Can you, is there anything you can do to your microphone? You're breaking up pretty good there.
I'm sorry about that. Let me see. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's much better now, yes.
Okay. Then
could you start over with the third one?
The Equinox and well, I was in the second one, which was the Equinox.
Okay.
The Equinox.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, the Equinox Resort and Spa in Manchester Village in Vermont.
Yeah,
That's the history. Yeah. Okay, that's the history and modern amenities there are well paired. This property that dates back to the Revolutionary War times. In addition to playing an enjoyable 18-hole layout, which was originally designed by Walter Travis and updated by Reese Jones, you can also attend a Land Rover Experience driving school, which is on a custom build course, or use a full service spa and choose from among five different types of accommodation options. A favorite summer activity is either canoeing or fly fishing on the Baton Kill River. So for novice waiters, the hotel also offers the Orvis Fly Fishing School. So you got a lot to do there. Number three is the Coeur d'Alene in Coeur d'Alene in Idaho. That's home to the famous, very famous, Island Par 3 hole that is only accessible by boat. buy bowls. You can imagine if you miss that, you're going to lose a lot of bowls there. But, you know, this resort is in the foothills of the Bitterroot Mountains. It's centered around a sparkling lake where you can take a sunset cruise or rent a boat to explore on your own. There's also plenty to do on land, including mountain bikes, tennis, and taking on the Scott Miller design layout, which is known as much for its top conditions as its memorable lake views. It's really beautiful. Silverwood, the Northwest's largest theme park with a 4 roller coasters and water park, is just 20 miles away, so you have a lot to do there in the Cordia Land in Cordia Land in Idaho. Number 4 is the Brookmoor in Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is located.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
This is located only 90 minutes south of Denver's International Airport. The legendary Brookmoor has 3 courses, including the East, which has hosted a pair of U.S. amateurs, including the 1959 version when Jack Nicklaus won, and 2 U.S. Women's Opens. An outdoor infinity pool features lake and Rocky Mountain views, and you can also play tennis, go whitewater rafting, take rock climbing, and fly fishing lessons, ride horses. Hey, just enjoy the pure mountain air. You know that.
Can I interrupt you here too?
Sure.
In the Broadmoor itself, you walk in the main entrance, and you turn to the right. There is the coolest bar, restaurant, grill, whatever you want to call it, to enjoy. Whether you want a cold beverage, you want a sandwich, you want to sit and talk, it's just cool. And the Broadmoor is it's really high on my list of great places, Carlos.
Yes, I got one. I got one this year. So,
yeah.
Hey, number 5 has to be, it's in Michigan. I couldn't stop talking about Michigan. Of course, you know, Michigan proclaims itself to be America's summer golf capital. So I have to talk about the Grand Traverse Resort and Spa in Acme there in Michigan. So why not find for yourself, you know, that Michigan is such America's summer golf capital. You know, the shores of Lake Michigan are home to this 900-acre property, which includes 3 courses, including designs by Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. It has a 7,000-square-foot spa, a private beach club, and even a customized retreat for dogs. So they won't feel left out. You can take them there. They have also an annual Beach Week event, which is very near from now. It's June 26th to July 6th. It includes live music, bonfires, and a beach Olympics, all held at the resort's private beach club on the shores of East Grand Traverse Bay. I think you wanted to say something about this.
Yeah, Carlos, it sits right outside Traverse City, which is one of the most beautiful cities in the summertime of any place in the world. And there's 3 casinos in the area if you like the nightlife and a little gambling action. Around Grand Traverse Bay, there's beautiful little towns. There's out on the peninsula, easy access to the vineyards and the wineries out there, and all Leelanau Peninsula. And you're an easy, a short drive up to Petoskey Bay Harbor and Harbor Springs, which is a wonderful area. Charlevoix. You know what? If you go to Michigan, the Grand Traverse would be a great place to stay because you can really get a good feel for Michigan from all areas by staying there. You know what? You might have picked the best one there, Carlos.
Yes, another one. Man, I'm on fire. And, hey, to finish, yeah, I couldn't stop with 5. I had to go to 6. But this one you already mentioned, is the American Club there in Colerain, Wisconsin. It's best known for its quartet of golf courses, including the multiple major venues. Like you already mentioned, Whistling Straits, which is overlooking Lake Michigan. The American Club is really more than just a collection of tees and greens located an hour north of Milwaukee. There's canoeing, kayaking, fishing, trap shooting, and archery, among other activities. Or if you want to get inspired at the Kohler Design Center for your future bathroom or kitchen remodeling project, and suit yourself, you can go there and do that too. Or you can also quench your summer thirst at the 3-day Kohler Festival of Beer, which is later this month. So excellent choices there. So, Fred, those are my top 6.
Yeah, and, you know, Whistling Straits, the clubhouse is all stone, a stone block building. It's just beautiful, set among the rolling hills, sand dunes of the Whistling Straits course and the Irish course that are sitting together there. And you can sit outside on a beautiful summer day or afternoon or evening, have a glass of wine, maybe an appetizer, sit on the veranda overlooking. You can see probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 holes on the Straits course. Look down over the Lake Michigan. Oh, my goodness. It's like heaven there. So that is beautiful. And, Carlos, we didn't mention New Hampshire, which I've been a couple places in New Hampshire. The Balsams is outstanding. There's an old Donald Ross course up in the mountain there that's really, really cool. Pennsylvania has great places in the Poconos. New York, of course, has some great, great golf courses. I've played a couple places up in the Catskills in the summertime. That's wonderful. And Jackson Hole, Wyoming is a beautiful place to go. It's just great. And then you mentioned the Broadmoor, Colorado. There's a couple other places in Colorado, too, that are good. But Broadmoor, that's pretty hard to argue with there. That's really cool. And I have to say, Carlos, if anybody has any questions or wants more information about any of these places, if they will just send me an email at fred@back9mediagroup.com, I'd be happy to forward along the links, people to contact, who can set you up and really design a really nice outing or summer vacation for you at any of these places.
There you have it. With this, we'll wrap up our topic of the week here on the practice range. And hope you like it. And like Fred mentioned, if you want to have any questions about any suggestions and people to set you up with, hey, write to Fred at Back9 Media Group, right, with the number 9 in the middle. And now we're going to pass to our final putts, and I'm going to start right away. I'm going to talk about Justin Rose, who has withdrawn last week from the Memorial as he continues to struggle the back injury that forced him out of last 2 weeks in the BMW PGA Championship. But at number 1 and number 10, Rose, he won at Mirfield Village, the event at 2010, the U.S. Open, as well as finishing runner-up in 2008 and 2015. He's confident he's making a return at the U.S. Open, which begins on June 16th. Rose, he won his only major championship to date at the 2013 the U.S. Open at Marion, said that Oakland is exactly the type of golf course that he loves to play, so he doesn't want to miss it. But so far, you know, he's at 50-50 to go there. He's really hopeful that he can make it there. There was some news today that Ricky Fowler is just not in the defense of his Scottish Open title, citing his busy summer schedule as the reason for not teeing it up at Castle Stewart. Ricky sent a letter to the sponsor at Aberdeen Asset Management to apologize for giving the tournament a miss, but he said he couldn't commit due to the golf's return to the Olympics. Their compact summer schedule has also seen Rory McIlroy and Justin Rose say they won't be competing at Castle Stewart. So, but still, that has a lot of great players there. Henrik Stenson, Luke Donald, there's some other great players that are going to be playing there. But, hey, those are three big names that are going to be there, especially the defending champion. Rory McIlroy, hey, can you think of a more appropriate place for the PGA superstar Rory McIlroy to get married than in a famous castle in Ireland? Hey, according to the Irish Mail, McIlroy and his fiancée Erica Stahl are planning a wedding at the 5-star Ashford Castle in County Mayo. The date they have in mind is New Year's Eve. You know, that is, I'm not going to say it's funny, maybe, because that's when he proposed also to his former fiancée. But anyway, that's when he's going to get married now to Erica. But Ashford Castle is an incredibly exclusive venue that is considered one of the best for weddings in Ireland. A number of celebrities, including former James Bond man Pierce Brosnan, have tied the knot there. So that's going to be interesting. Also, I have to mention my weekly talk about the Olympics and the Zika virus there. I have to add this here because today there was an announcement from the officials for the Rio Olympics committee that tried to assure the athletes and visitors on Tuesday that Zika will not be a big risk to the games in August. You know, health officials say that they expect much less activity by the Aedes aegyptis mosquitoes that carry the Zika as the weather gets colder, because you know what? It's going to be winter. Okay, the winter on the southern hemisphere is on June, July, and August, and those during that time, the Zika, the Aedes aegypti is just virtually non-existent because of the cold. So hey, stop saying it's because of the Zika that you're not gonna play on the golf there in the tournament. So you look for another excuse from now on. And finally, here's one more reason to visit Las Vegas for all you amateur golfers out there with dreams of glory. On Thursday, Loon Rouge Innovation, a creative company backed by Canadian billionaire Guy Laliberté, announced it was starting the major series of putting championship in Las Vegas next March that will offer millions in total prize money. So get your putter going. This isn't mini golf. It promises to be a giant 20,000 square foot stadium course by Nicholas Design with 18 holes that will be built near the Vegas Strip. Tournaments will take place over 3 weeks under the lights with various entry fees, including a $5,000 entry stroke play championship, and the winner is currently $155,000. So just like the World Series of Poker, which Laliberté himself has competed in, some entries will come from qualifiers. Live scoring, giant screens, a sports bar, live entertainment, and clubhouses at both ends with bleachers for friends and family will be included as well. Fred, the company has brought in professional golfer Brad Faxon to serve as an advisor to this project.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've played some of these fancy putting courses that different places have. Pinehurst has a really great one. I think it's called Thistledew putting course. I've played a couple other ones at different places also. They're a lot of fun. And I could see where a big-time tournament, you know, that would draw a lot of interest to guys that think they're good putters. That could be a lot of fun, actually. You know, you talked about the Zika virus there real briefly, and Rory was asked about it in his press conference last week at Columbus. And he said he's done a lot of research. He's now ready to go. He's going to get his shots. I mean, he got his shots. He's all set. And he was saying, you know, part of the concern was not necessarily for the players, for the athletes themselves, but for the 500 or 600,000 people, fans and visitors that are going to be coming to the area that may become affected and then take the virus back to their home country, you know, where they have it kind of contained now in Brazil, maybe in a couple other places. They were afraid that might spread it worldwide. So that was another thing that came out of that. Carlos, the last couple of things I have here real quick, Graham Dillette, I've heard of guys, you know, having a bad back, a sore shoulder, they tweaked their ankle, whatever, they couldn't play, they had to withdraw, they got sick, but Graham Dillette had to withdraw from Memorial last week with the chipping yips, okay? He just said, I can't get it on the green, I can't get it around, and Jeff Shackelford quoted Crash Davis from Bull Durham, maybe it's time to lose the playoff beard. So maybe that huge beard is throwing off his equilibrium, Carlos. I don't know. I'm just saying. Hey, Arnold Palmer's coming out with a new book in October. It's kind of a follow-up to his original A Golfer's Life written by Jim Dotson in 1999. You can pre-order it for $18 on Amazon. Excuse me. Name of the book is A Life Well Played, My Stories. Arnie said, though I've written a number of books in the past, this one was particularly important to me because as I delved into the process, I realized just how much I still wanted to say to my friends in golf and to fans of the game in general, you know, all the things he's got. Going through the exercise of getting all down has been personally satisfying, but I couldn't have done it without a dedicated group of individuals who truly believed in the project. Tiger Woods. In the news, he is still among the top 10 most popular athletes in the world, according to ESPN. ESPN used a formula that combined salary and endorsements with social media activity and Google search popularity to create the ESPN World Fame 100 rankings. Golfers on the list start with Woods at number 7. Followed by Phil Mickelson, number 13, Rory, number 20, Jordan Spieth, 50, Justin Rose, 51, Lydia Ko, a woman golfer in there, at number 81, and Billy Horschel, number 83. World number 1, Jason Day, isn't even on the list. Tiger, Phil, and Rory each rank higher than NBA MVP Steph Curry and Super Bowl quarterbacks Cam Newton and Peyton Manning. And number 7, Woods earned his ranking primarily by having still a lot of endorsement money, 3.1 million Facebook likes and 5.8 million Twitter followers. So he gets some social media hits. The number one athlete on the list is a soccer guy, Cristiano Ronaldo. You probably know who that is. He's a salary of $53 million, $27 million in endorsements, 111 million Facebook likes, and 42.7 million Twitter followers. That's obscene. Also, Jack Nicklaus announced last week that Greg Norman would be the honoree for the Memorial Tournament next year. Norman spent over 300 weeks as the number one ranked player in the world and was known the world over as the Great White Shark. He built a business empire that is worth over $1 billion today. And last but not least, there's a fantastic article in the Wall Street Journal about the top-ranked amateur and Stanford junior, Mav McNeely. I've been reading about Mav McNeely for several years. He's been a top amateur, a great college player. About him, the prospect of turning professional upon graduation from Stanford. He says pro golf may not be in his future. There's other things he wants to do. He can't see himself standing on a driving range or around a chipping green or putting green for 6.5, 7, 8 hours a day or just walking around a golf course. He's got other things he wants to do, Carlos. Of course, it doesn't hurt that his dad is the, you know, owner and founder of a famous tech company. So, you know, I don't think he's hurt for bucks.
No, that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yes.
I just want to add one comment to Graham DeLay. You know, it's funny because tour pros withdraw from tournaments all the time. Unfortunately, there are also a lot of times they use what we call questionable injuries to flee the scene, but not him. He's as honest as it gets. But I think I don't know why. You know, Jack Nicklaus didn't tell him. Just what you were saying. Hey, lose the freaking beard, man. Lose the freaking beard.
There you go. Yeah.
Just do that, man. That will wrap up.
Maybe did in private.
Yeah. That will wrap up another week of the Mac 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VAGs, a very important guest of the week, Jason Day, number one in the world, golfer and tag player. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you miss it, hey, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, hey, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.